What episode is this?
57
548.
548.
What year is
yeah.
this?
Look, I'm tired, all right?
Off to a great start.
I worked 13 hours yesterday. I'm done. All right. Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today is Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
Guillaume Vayette.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right, Guillaume. It's going all right. And out for John, who I'm not even going to bother making up an excuse for where he is today. I don't care. Is Sir Ed McNulty.
It's been 3 months.
Has it really been 3 months?
Mm-hmm. A little over.
You know, I'm trying to mix the guesting up a little bit, get some new faces in. But you have a lot of games to talk about. But
I do.
Before I throw it to anybody, and I haven't, mostly because I haven't decided who I'm going to throw it to yet, it is November 16, 2017, and this is episode 548 of this podcast, which is not a true statement because technically it's like 700-something, but, you know, whatever. And now I'm going to throw it to somebody, and I'm going to pick randomly.
We have a protocol for this. We guess go first.
We do have a protocol, but you know what?
It usually excludes me. Every time I'm on, yep.
Fine, engage. You go first. I don't care.
Engage
no,
protocol, cat helmet.
Go, Greg.
I have a cold. You guys can just sort out amongst yourselves.
Greg,
wake me
you
up when it's
first.
My turn to talk.
Fair enough.
I'm going to take a nap, wake me up when it's my turn to talk, and then we'll go.
Okay, this is the cat helmet protocol. Well, other than general messing around in Odyssey still, the big thing for me this week was Rocket League. I finally got around to playing that. I have had access to it for a while, with it being on Xbox One, after, you know, it kind of rose to the public consciousness when it was on PS Plus, I guess, was kind of the genesis of its mainstream kind of breakout. But since that time, it seemed like the kind of thing that would suit me well. Kind of action-y, kind of arcade-style, kind of sports type of thing. But I didn't really think I would, even when it did get to Xbox One and stuff, I just didn't really think I'd get the use out of it. Would merit the purchase on that platform, and also it would require me to actually be on Xbox Live, which I've not really seen the enough kind of rewards for doing that to be a member of Gold. So, you know, once they announced that it would be coming to Switch and all that was, as I mentioned on the show, something I've been looking forward to, and so yeah, downloaded it a couple of days ago. And haven't played it a great deal yet, but, you know, as I said, it's the big thing's going to be, like, for the illustration for me is, like, the difference between Splatoon and Splatoon 2. Like, I probably got about 30 hours in to Splatoon, and I'm currently, like, over 80 on Splatoon 2, and probably will blow past 100 before, you know, we get down to trivial numbers.
So we actually played some Splatoon with you the other day, so, yeah.
We did. Yep,
we can talk about that during my segment.
You were very, very leveled up.
Yeah, exactly. But leveling in that game is a function of playing it a lot, not being very good at it. And that is, I said, that's the difference. The portable play has afforded me the opportunity to really sink some time into that. That I didn't with the original because it didn't have off TV play because the way it used the gamepad. Unfortunately, so I couldn't sort of play in that quasi portable way that I did with Mario Kart 8 and Smash Brothers, etc. on Wii U. But with Rocket League, the portable play is a big deal. So that was the thing. I mean, when people were talking, I was reading some impressions and whatnot before I pulled the trigger on the purchase, that was what I was looking for. It was how it performed in portable mode, really. You know,
right.
the dock was not of the. It's nice, for the odd time that I could pick up the Pro Controller and play it on the TV and stuff. But that's not really going to be the bread and butter consumption of this kind of game. It's going to be the fact it's there on the system all the time, digitally installed. Just pick it up, have a quick sort of casual game, and enjoy it. And so, thus far, having not played it before. a fair chunk of it has just been me trying to get acclimated even before I tried playing online, because, you know, especially like with the cross play that's in there, although you can turn that off naturally, I did not want to just get into a match and be completely useless, surrounded by people who actually knew what they were doing. So I did a quick little season, and the training stuff is not bad. That, you know, it gives you a chance to practice your saving shots, you know, going up in the air to snag the ball, shooting, like, you know, the basics of it, and to get it down. And I still need to improve a great deal in those areas, no doubt. It's like really just getting a feel for the timing of everything, you know, the physics of the ball, and, you know, when it is going to sort of reach that perfect height to kind of go up and either, you know, sort of make a desperate clearance or go up for the shot to score and stuff. So lots to learn yet, but it's been fun so far, as I imagined it would be. You know, and certainly on the technical side, visually, it's not pretty in portable mode, even for someone who's never seen what the game is meant to look like. You know, like, I've not seen it on Xbox One or anything, but it's got a, because it's presumably because it's running a resolution below that of the native resolution of the Switch screen, it sort of has got a kind of fuzzy look to it, that you know, and it's got some jagged edges and this kind of stuff. So not the prettiest looking thing in the world. Certainly does look better docked, there's no doubt about that, but as I said, that's of kind of secondary importance to me. But, you know, it remains to in my experience, and again, I stress I haven't got the reference to the kind of full fat version on other consoles or PC, but it remains very playable in terms of the frame rate, and you can still distinguish things in the distance. Some of, they kind of do some things with the ball, like having a white outline around it when it's very far off, that kind of helps mitigate the fact that, you know, it's the resolution is not as high this is pretty spacious, the play area. So, mm-hmm. You know, the ball can get really far away, especially if you're, you know, trying to be like the one guy that's hanging back to defend while a bunch of stuff is going on up the pitch. So, you know, that would be a concern, you know, kind of was a concern of mine, but generally it seems to play well, and the frame rate is stable and all that kind of stuff. And so you've just got the enjoyment of the core game. And again, I had confidence in that because I did like Blast Ball with Federation Force to a fair extent, which owes a fair bit to this. There's plenty of similarities there, but obviously, you know, this is more spacious, faster, kind of, and less direct, really. I mean, there's definitely, when you're not that great at the game, there's plenty of times where I've kind of just felt like a glorified spectator because it's like, well, I'm zooming around the place, but not a lot. Every now and again, I just like do a little flip and miss the ball. Then kind of another minute will go by without providing any meaningful action. I got invited into a game by someone on my friends list, Clay, the other yesterday night as we record this, and he did most of the work in those games, especially because some of them were 2v2, so I'm like 50% of the team, and that was not very helpful. Dear. Yeah, but, you know, I'm learning a little bit, and you've got loads of different options for setting up matches, and you know, in terms of like just playing casual stuff, or, you know, you can take it to ranked and stuff like that. So I guess if I really, really got to like it, eventually, you know, you could go into those sorts of areas. But, you know, with the price you're paying and all that kind of stuff, I'd be quite happy to have it as a kind of occasional kind of casual dalliance, you know, as it is. And it's just, it's a cool concept that is just undeniably extremely satisfying, that kind of, that indirect kind of nature of it, you know, unlike like an actual like arcade soccer game of, you know, where you can control the ball and dribble and pass and all the usual stuff. The fact that it feels, you know, less direct than that, it feels like much more of an effort to like even just kind of meaningfully interact with the ball makes it extremely satisfying when you actually do something productive. You know, when it's just that feel of like, okay, you know what, I think the ball is going to come into the center here. I've been hanging back. I'm going to slam the turbo, gamble, get myself in there, go up, and hopefully the ball will just intersect on the front of the car, and it does, and you score. It's a great feat. That is a wonderful feeling. So I've got plenty of high hopes for this being something I'll keep coming back to over and over again, especially because I just feel like the online stuff's got a nice kind of smoothness to it compared to like some Nintendo stuff, Splatoon 2 in particular, in terms of like the way that you can kind of join. It will like match you if you're like just playing casual games, which is what I've been doing so far naturally. Like you will get warped into a game that's already begun, you know, for instance. So it's like, well, yeah, to be honest, I'd rather that than just have to wait like a whole bunch of time to actually get in a fresh game, because I just want minutes. I just want experience with actual players at this point. And also, for instance, like if you come out of a game because of a disconnect, you get dropped, like it will give you the chance to reconnect, which is, you know, for a game you're playing on a portable and stuff, it's a pretty big deal. Splatoon 2, you know, for as much as I've enjoyed it and played loads of it, you know, that can be pretty annoying when it's like you get a dropout, and then not only can you not like them when, you know, pretty immediately the internet corrects itself and you're back in, not only can you not rejoin that game that you're in, but you can't join anything for 5 minutes. You know, like, so yeah, the kind of ease with which you could just slip in and out of stuff here is really suitable to the portable play, and I think, you know, more sort of in line with the way I'm going to play it anyway.
So my question, I haven't been really following, do you have the Luigi skin unlocked from the beginning?
Yeah, I believe so. It's Samus one, I think, had to come in a little bit. I played for a bit and it just unlocked. I don't think there was anything in particular I did for that. I assume it's just like a, you know, a particular probability. After so many matches, that's just going to happen eventually. But Mario and Luigi were just there, yeah, from the off.
Nice. I don't really care about Mario, but Luigi is important.
Yeah, Guillaume's all about number two. All right, Seren.
Hi. So I've been playing a lot.
Yeah.
It's November. First, I want to speak to my Extra Life stream on Saturday, 11/11, which bunch of listeners already tuned in for. Greg tuned in for. James and John helped host some segments. My goal was set for $750, and we raised $1,587.
Nice.
Because the creator of the Five Nights at Freddy's series came in and dropped $1,337 at once.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I did the research, and that wasn't someone using their name.
I wondered if, like, maybe he just kind of, like, cruises for Extra Life streams because he's so loaded and just drops money. Like,
I think that might be it. I'm not going to complain. We raised a lot of money for a great cause. We played some great games. We played some terrible games. I got to go up against Greg one-on-one when we were both trying to turn in Splatoon 2, and he had motion enabled, and I didn't. And he turned way faster than I did and splatted me.
I'm using tilt controls.
I love that. That's one of the things I love about motion controls in that game.
Didn't think it would give too much of a boost to horizontal, but it turns out I was wrong.
It sure does.
In general, you know, I always feel like that must be like what everyone else is doing to me. You know, like, normally it's like, how the hell did they turn that fast and kill me? So it's nice to know that sometimes the shoe's on the other foot.
It was basically a Western showdown because our backs were basically to each other and both tried to turn to aim at each other, and he just turned about twice my speed. So,
When you get, and obviously I've played enough of that game
to be considerably better than I am, frankly. But, you know, I've certainly played it enough to get used to the motion controls. When you get used to them, you know, they are very useful, I find.
Yes. They've just never clicked with me too much. But, so, that aside, just wanted to touch on that and thank everyone for their time and their contributions. That was a lot of fun. Archive should be on YouTube soon. So, it's November, which means it's holiday season, and it's coming up on Game of the Year season, and I've been playing a little bit of everything. So, I just wanted to touch on six games real quick. The first is the Switch port of Doom. So that is not a very good port of a very great game.
This is Panic Button, but they did, they're credited with on Rocket League as well.
Yes, they did Rocket League and Doom, and they released like 3 days apart or something ridiculous like that.
Crunch culture.
Yeah. So the thing about Doom on Switch, well, I guess there are two principal issues that I have with it. The first is the dead zone on the Joy-Con, especially, but also on the Pro Controller, is way larger than on the analog sticks than the dead zone on the Xbox One controller or the PlayStation 4 controller. And especially in portable play, that means that trying to have a minute, like, I just want to quickly look up and hit this thing in the head, means you have to push the stick further, and the throw is shorter on the Joy-Con, so you start looking up towards the ceiling a lot quicker. And
yeah, see, that's where the you know, had they put in a bit of gyro aiming, that could have, like, compensated for that.
And I messed around with the sensitivity settings. The sensitivity settings, like, are robust for both axes independently, and, like, they set you out with different sensitivity settings than they do on the other consoles, which means they know. But
sure.
I don't know. It didn't... That never clicked for me. And then the other thing is that on TV and on the Switch handheld mode, so it's 30 frames per second, and that's fine. The frame rate... Guy mentioned this when he tried it out at the Nintendo Canada event like 2 weeks ago. It feels like it registers input at 60 and it displays at 30. So it feels fine. It renders up to 720p.
Yeah, so that's the ceiling even in docked, right?
Yes. It goes up to, but that does not stay at 720. It can go down to, I think, around 480p.
It's funny actually, because it's obviously this is sort of an issue with Rocket League as well, in that sometimes playing it in portable mode, it feels more like playing Wii U off TV than I thought it would, in terms of once you actually start playing content on the Switch that's like sub the native resolution, it reminds you of that more. Obviously it's different, you know, there are different things with the streaming and the video artifacts and stuff than you're gonna get with just something running sub native resolution, but it is a bit like that. But then I played hundreds of hours of games like that, so I can certainly tolerate it under the right conditions.
Yeah, and so when you go up, like, when you, like, the best way I have to explain it is in the Switch album, the Switch's screenshot album, when you first click on a picture, it's really fuzzy and then it pops in at the full resolution. It's that a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's that, but it never pops in.
No, it does. Sometimes it pops in and pops back out.
Oh, I suppose, if like things calm down,
it stays locked at 30, whatever that means for the resolution. And all the textures have been extremely compressed because it's they fit the entire campaign onto the Switch cartridge, and the game is, I think, 70-80 gigs on PS4, Xbox One.
Yeah, I remember the last update was like 100 gigs or something ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Like the fact that it's just blurry and it doesn't look very good, and the throw on the Joy-Con mixed with the dead zone on the Joy-Con, it's just not the best way to play that. Also, there was some interesting reporting about the fact that the multiplayer, if you bought it on a cartridge, was going to be downloadable separately. It's not. it is a separate download, but it takes the form of a day one patch that's mandatory. So there isn't an option to just not download the multiplayer.
I see. Nice.
So if, like, you could just cancel the patch and load into it, but that means that any future bug fixes you're not going to get.
Yeah, unless, because I mean, most games on Switch seem to need a hell of a lot of things that usually need addressing pretty quickly with new games released on Switch.
Yeah, you put the cartridge in, and then it immediately begins an 8GB day one patch. I will say, the multiplayer, I don't like it very much, but I tried twice on two very inopportune times for matchmaking, and I found full matches immediately, so people are playing.
Well, that's nice. I have Doom, as I've discussed before, and I have never touched the multiplayer.
Yeah, I don't like it that much, but people are playing it on Switch, and it's popular on the eShop charts. Very good game.
I'll be curious if the Wolfenstein port is better.
I
suspect it probably will be.
Reading around on Microsoft, I've not played the new Wolfenstein yet. John has, but
it's so good.
The suggestion seems to be that it would be more taxing.
Yes.
So could that? I know it's coming later, but doesn't that raise the possibility that the port could be in a sense worse?
Yeah, it does.
Yes, it does. I will also say, for the control issues, that's probably less of an issue with Wolfenstein. It is also a frenetic, fast-paced game, but in a different way than Doom.
I would say that to a certain degree, they're in-housing Wolfenstein, though, right?
I think it's... I mean, it's the same engine, so I assume Panic Button's work carries over, even if Panic Button doesn't directly handle the porting process on Wolf. They don't think they've explicitly said. They also haven't shown any footage of it running on Switch.
But it's not coming out for a while either.
Yeah, it's coming out probably before E3, but it's coming out next year. So, I don't know. Buyer beware on Doom. So the other Bethesda game that's coming out tomorrow, as of time of recording, is Skyrim on Switch.
Yes.
Which is a very different story. That is a very good port.
Yeah, the reviews have been really quite... People are basically going, like, I didn't anticipate using this game very much, but I ended up playing the game to completion again.
Yeah, so the other... The thing to keep in mind is... first of all, people have been asking, what version of Skyrim is this? Is this the 360 PS3 version, or is this the Xbox One and PS4 version, or somewhere in the middle? Because they're just calling it Skyrim for Nintendo Switch. It's in the middle. It has a lot of the... It has, like, the new skyboxes, but it doesn't have the new god rays. It has the new... a lot of the new textures, but not a lot of the new lighting. So, they made it work. It has a way more solid frame rate than the PS4 and Xbox One versions do. it performs way better than those versions. And it looks really good in handheld mode. I was worried that the text wasn't going to be readable, but it is. A really good port. Also, it's an authentic Skyrim port because it hard crashed within an hour.
Good.
So it is the authentic Skyrim experience. Don't worry. Bugs are still there. But...
It might be a few patches for that one too, I feel.
Oh yeah, but it's got all the DLC.
Yeah, it will never like fix everything, obviously.
No.
Or add Barney, to
yeah, mods aren't in there. If that's the thing you're holding up for, that's not in the Switch version. But other than that, yeah, it's got all the DLC packs. It's the full huge game. It's not my cup of tea, but it is the ideal without mods. It is the ideal version of Skyrim on Switch that you want. Performs very well. Also, speaking of M-rated backports to Switch, L.A. Noire. The thing about L.A. Noire is Rockstar, in the eShop description and on the box, say, like, portable detective work, as, like, once per paragraph or something. They view this as a portable version. And in portable mode, handheld mode, very, very good. Locked frame rate, it has the same... it's 720p 30 docked, 10 or handheld, 1080 30 docked. It has the same visuals as the base PS4 and Xbox One versions. I think the lighting is slightly different, but other than that, it's the same as those versions. It has touchscreen support. It has motion controls. They redid a lot of the UI. And it, in handheld mode, very, very great. And then you dock it, and it starts having performance issues a la Sonic Boom on Wii U. Where I docked it, and I was in a chase sequence in the open world. So I'm playing as this detective who's chasing down another character, and the world isn't, like, open, but I'm supposed to chase this character through an environment, and I'm not Digital Foundry, but I could manually count some of the frames. Yeah. And then I undocked it, and it snapped right back to 30.
Huh. Well, he said, I guess it shows where the emphasis has gone with the optimizing.
Yes, they have optimized this thing as a handheld game. Other thing to note is that it is 30 gigs downloadable or retail card plus 14 mandatory.
Yeah, I saw that. It's they're getting ridiculously big in terms of, yes, like, you couldn't install it to the system memory if you wanted to.
The retail box says micro SD card may be required.
If you want to play it, that is.
It just might. It just might.
But it has... and one other thing is that they added HD Rumble. And they added... Boy. They need a volume slider for the HD Rumble. This is reminiscent of Snake Pass.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are games where it is very loud. It kind of reminds me of the Metroid Prime Pinball Rumble Pack when it's, like, calibrated to be too loud. Because there's as much sound as anything else. Namco Museum has some games that are a bit like that.
And, like, in Mario Kart, like, they make actual, like, the coin sound effects come out of the rumble motors. It's like they use, the pitch. Okay, so in handheld mode... And I was not playing with headphones, I was just using the speakers. It was fine. Like, the mix of the rumble and the sound was good. And then I docked it and started using the Pro Controller. And so, for instance, if you're climbing up a pipe, it will rumble left and right every time Cole's, your main character's, feet touch the wall. Ugh. And it was louder than my TV.
Wow! That's it. I mean, I haven't used the Pro Controller that much, but I always tended to think that was, like, quieter than the Joy-Con, usually.
No, and then, so when you land loud HD rumble, when your feet touch something, when you make physical contact in combat, when you shoot, everything is HD rumble. And it's all one volume, and it's very loud. So be warned with LA Noire with that. So next up, this is going to be really short. So I bought the Snipperclips Plus DLC. Didn't 100% the original Snipperclips, but I was going to hang out with some friends, and we're going to get a group of us together, and so I thought, and most of them had played some of Snipperclips before, and so the thing I was interested in was the random shapes, where it's plus, you can start old puzzles, or the two new worlds of puzzles, as, like, a Christmas tree and a circle, and figure it out. So we started it up. I had installed the DLC beforehand, but I hadn't launched it. We started it up, and I went into the options, and I couldn't find anything. I was like, that's weird. So we launched into a level, and I went into the options there, and I couldn't find anything. And so we waited. My friends patiently waited for about 5 minutes while I went everywhere in the game, could not find it anywhere, and Google searched, like, three different terms to try and find anything about this. And the only thing I could find was some Reddit post asking the same thing the day before, and then the one comment was just like, I don't know, maybe they expect you to have beaten every level? So, we got to the end of the main three worlds, and I still have no idea how you get to that feature. So,
okay, that's really weird because, yeah, like the feature was unlocked when I played the demo at the Nintendo of Canada event. And it's just, it was not for every level, I don't think. You know, it was just for the puzzles where you had to reproduce a shape. And it was like at the beginning when, like, you select the level and then it asks you, do you want random shapes or not? And I chose not, so.
We didn't get that on any, we tried that type of level, we tried other types of levels, we tried levels we had beaten, but levels we hadn't beaten, it just never showed up. So, buyer beware if that's the feature you want the DLC for? Because I don't know how to actually trigger that. And we played for like 2 hours, and it never popped up. New levels are good, though.
Yes.
So then, Pokemon Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, it's fine. It's less good than Sun and Moon, actually.
Oh, how come?
So the new pitch is, same game, different story. And so what they did was they changed a lot of character motivations later in the story to accommodate the new legendary Necrozma and the Ultra Beast Wormholes, etc., into the main story. And
did
doing
you just
that,
say Necrozma and Altered Beast Wormholes?
Ultra Beast.
Ultra Beast.
Okay.
Yes.
Altered Beast Wormholes is the whole situation.
Is the name of this episode.
Yeah,
not yet.
That bear looks like a legendary Pokemon to me, at least when he's drawn by the Pokemon artist on the cover of Sega 3D Classics Collection.
So, absolutely. So they changed a lot of the character motivations, and because of that, a lot of the character motivations become less interesting, and a lot of the most interesting stuff in the story is no longer relevant or there.
Yeah, what was our second best idea for the motivations of these characters? We'll do that.
Yeah, and then the stuff that, like, one of the characters, I don't want to spoil too much, had a very clear motivation for, like, science and personal interest. And then their motivation in this basically becomes, I want to do it, because. And then it becomes a world-ending threat similar to all the other Pokemon games, instead of, it was slightly more nuanced than the original Sun and Moon, and then they get rid of that nuance. Post-game is better, but the main selling point is the new story, and the new story is not as good as the old story.
Well, what's like the totem battles? Like, have they got new totem battles? Like, different from the original campaign.
Yeah, the totem battles for the challenges are all slightly different, and in the original, so there are 8 challenges in the Alola region, and in Sun and Moon there were only 7 you played through because you met the 8th, who was just wandering a road and was like, oh. Hey, you're cool. Here's my here's my badge. See ya. And then walks away.
Been hanging out with the Jabun from Wind Waker, presumably.
So she actually has a trial in this game. And all the other trials are slightly different, and all the totem Pokemon are slightly different. Like, it's different. And there's more Pokemon in the, like, in the wild grass and stuff. But, like, I don't know. It's whatever. It is very much, a Platinum Emerald style instead of a Black 2, White 2. Except they made 2 versions. Because,
yes,
cha-ching!
They maintain that particular
distinction. But, yeah, it's fine. It's not really anything. Like, people have been like, why aren't you advertising this as much as we feel like you should? Because you have 2 new Pokemon games coming out. Turns out they have nothing to advertise.
Yeah, they pushed them pretty hard last year, didn't they? Really hard.
So. Oh,
really?
Yeah, 20th anniversary. Really, like, new announcements every week. Yep, or every month.
This is kind of just coasting off that still, probably as much as anything. I mean, a lot of this late 3DS stuff is they're not putting much of their marketing clout behind it. I mean, obviously, Pokemon is far more major than some of these other things, but the Kirby. Game.
Oh my god!
Out,
I played that.
Came out in Europe, and just you would barely know it. I mean, it'd be like a week after Odyssey or whatever, and everything else that's going on. It's not surprising, but they didn't exactly try very hard to make it rise above the din.
And Greg, that game was bad.
Yeah, I played the demo, which is like pretty limited. But it didn't give a great impression either.
Yeah. So. I'll speak to this real quick. I tried to play online with Dawn. European copy. It's not out in Japan or America right now.
Yeah.
It's only
probably,
on Europe.
Probably better timing, to be honest, early next year than now.
So, yeah, it released in Europe, and I have a European 3DS because I'm a lunatic. I actually have multiple. That's a whole other story. So, tried to play with Dom. We added each other to our friends list. He had played, like, 15 hours of the game, and he was like, yeah, let me add your friend code. We both go into online. Only one option, ranked. So it's like, okay, there's probably no one playing online. It's like 3 a.m. in the Netherlands. So let's do this. And so we got on Skype, and we both hit ranked, and it picked three of like the 15 random game modes. And it's just like, here are the three that you can choose between right now. It's like, that's weird. So we both picked the same one. We both entered lobbies with just ourselves. Hmm. And we sat there for about 5 minutes, someone entered Don's lobby and then exited 5 seconds later. I never had anyone show up in my lobby. I kept quitting, and it kept cycling in new game modes, and I just kept trying to join him. He kept trying to join me. It never worked. Someone on Twitter suggested that they may be IP region locking, which they've never done before, so I don't believe that, but...
Yeah. Okay, they're like, just like, trying to VPN? Know, they're talking about a portable system here, so it's like, you know, should it really be, like, even if you've got like a...
It's a region-locked system.
Yeah, it's, but you know, if you take it abroad, you know, should it be less useful at that point?
I have no clue, but all I know is that we couldn't make it work, and also the single player of that is pretty bad. Local is apparently good, according to Don. But the reason I've been using my European 3DS is I've been playing the full version of, oh god, what's the name? Nintendo Presents : New Style Boutique 3-Styling Star, which is the fourth game in the series. Not the third. Because the second one in Europe was called New Styling Boutique, and the third one was called New Styling Boutique 2. In Japan, this is Girls Mode 4. In North America, this is coming out on Christmas Day as an eShop-only game called Style Savvy Styling Star. Yes. And it's Star Stylist in Japan and Styling Star. Look, it's SSSS.
It's all about it being alliterative, yeah.
Yes. So I got this game, I think, on the 8th. It's out in Europe at the end of the month. And I got it so I could write a preview about it for Nintendo World Report, which I did. It's over 2,000 words, and you should go read that. It's genuinely, and it's mostly just an explanation of what the series is and why I like it and why more people should give it a chance. It's not really a breakdown of this game so much as the series. I will say that even in this busy season, I think I've clocked 27 hours into this already. And I think I'm halfway through Act 2 of the story. And when the credits roll at the end of Act 3, I know that the game isn't over by a long shot. I think I'm level 29 out of 50? I think the level cap is 50 in this game. The men's clothing option just became available, like 20-ish hours in. I don't know. This is, I don't want to speak too much about it. You can go read on the site. On NintendoWorldReport.com specifically. But
you think it would be easier and you would need less experience to dress a man?
I can say that the men's clothing options are certainly more boring. Mm. Enid Shen, that brand, just opened up in the exhibition hall, which they sell chic clothing, which I'm very excited for because them and Corral are my two favorite brands, although I have a lot of friends who are just super into AZUSA, which is the bold brand. So
are these real or what?
No. These are all fictional brands, but the brands stay the same through the game. So Marzipan Sky primarily sells girly clothes.
That just sounds like the Sci-Fi Channel knockoff version of Vanilla Sky.
One of the most interesting wrinkles is that, like, so you when a customer comes in, they might say, "Well, here's a bizarre-ass customer I actually got yesterday." She said, "Okay, So I was at a restaurant and
I
spilled spaghetti on my casual dress yesterday. This was a nightmare. So I need a girly casual dress that's the color of spaghetti. So what she means is yellow, not red, by the way. So
it's cranberry juice, cran apple.
So you go in, and you can manually search. You can narrow your stock that you've purchased, because this is also a business management sim. You can narrow it down by saying, like, only show me yellow casual dresses that are girly below $180, because they only want to spend $180. Because in the European version, you can choose your currency, which is really nice.
Does it adjust the amounts, or does it just change the symbol? Oh, good.
No. So it's just euros, like, or dollars.
The way things are going.
I was going to say, is there like a Brexit simulator in there?
Yeah, they're probably going to be worth about $1 pretty soon.
I just killed a man. I loved it. I want a dress that reminds me of it all the time.
It's rated 3+.
So you're saying that might not be in there, is that?
Might not.
Well, look, as long as the ESRB doesn't see it, it's fine.
Does not rate games for Europe, James. Back to Style Savvy. So you can organize and sort your stock by the criteria, or you can try and say, well, Marzipan Sky usually sells things that are girly, but this AZUSA, which usually sells things that are bold, dress looks like it could be girly, and you get rewarded more if you sort of use your own intuition and do something
surprise. Yeah, kind of like do it by algorithm. Like,
yes.
if you kind of use a little bit of inspiration, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that everything has, like, multiple sorting tags. Like, every item that is predominant, like, first and foremost, a girly item will show up when you search for girly, but not everything that could be accepted as girly will show up through the sorting function.
Right.
So, you get rewarded, and the worst... This sometimes also does bite me in the ass, though, because a woman came in wearing a bunch of boho chic outfit, like a boho chic sweater and trousers, because this is an aggressively European game.
Well, you do not want to be using pants in the wrong context in this kind
dungaroos.
Of game.
I had to find someone's dungaroos.
Okay.
This is an aggressively European localization. Anyways, so she came in wearing all boho chic, and she says, find me shoes that match my style. So I gave her boho chic shoes, and then I got a frowny face sound effect. It was like, no, I actually wanted preppy. It's just that all the boho chic outfits I had also technically counted as preppy. I was like, oh, fuck you, game.
I want to die.
But, no. It's, anyways, so that's Style Savvy. Go read the preview. It's real good. If you think you might not care, at least read the preview, because you might actually. I've made a lot of people play this game, and the worst anyone's ever said for it was not for me, but no one has ever said it was bad or anything along those lines. That's my segment. It's very, very good. It's one of my favorite Nintendo franchises.
Would you say it's your favorite Nintendo franchise with New in the title?
Yes, I would. And it's also my favorite franchise that Aki, the creators of the N64 wrestling games, made. Because they make these games.
I could imagine John Z is picking up right about now if he was with us.
Yes, no. Sin Sophia is Aki.
So, Guillaume.
Yes. So, I have gotten an early review code for Rive on the Switch. And I got it directly, and I'm not sure, like, I'm like, how come, like, they got my email? And it's probably from, you know, it's probably from playing the demo of Tokitori 2 all those years ago at PAX East. And so, you know, like, okay, cool, I'll take it. Like, we already, as a
I'll
site...
I'll take it, and it'll never pay off again.
Yeah, probably not.
Sadly.
The site Nintendo World Report already had review codes, right? But I'll take it, of course. I've been waiting for to play Rive for a long time.
Absolutely. It's the E3 at home experience.
Oh my god. While we're, you know, before we forget, like they've announced today Two Tribes that if you played the demo on your Wii U all those years ago, you do get 15% off. You do get the promised discount.
Is it that you were going to have? Literally specific, or are they
no,
just cutting
they said
the price?
That everyone would get it.
Oh, okay. Oh, well.
I mean, obviously, people that played the demo, like me, like I did, that was by far the star of that show for me, with that demo, being that I did not attend the show. So those are the only demos I got to play. But it's everybody you get the chance to get it at the lower price, which is it's cool.
Yeah, and it's not really that expensive in the first place, so definitely check it out. I wasn't sure exactly what to expect, because despite looking forward to it, I kind of kept away from reviews because I just, you know, it's been out for a long time on PC, on PlayStation 4, and I just I didn't want to, you know, I guess spoil myself, or I didn't want to buy a new piece of hardware. So I stayed away from everything. And so I knew that by the time that Rive released, Tokitori 2 underperformed for Two Tribes, and they had to do a lot of layoffs. And I was wondering, like, is it going to be reflected in the quality of the game? And first of all, like, the game is an action game. It's not a puzzle game. It's not Tokitori 2 at all, but it's running on the same engine. The levels kind of feel like they were meant to be interconnected. So you're playing in discrete levels. Like when you select the story, the campaign, you're going through, you know, level one, level two, level three, and there's not, you're not exploring. Like you're not going out of your way to find secrets. You're not, you know, there might be secret areas. I'm pretty sure actually that the achievements in the game tell me that I did not find a secret room somewhere. But like you're very much on one path. And you know, as you shoot down enemies, so it's not about exploration the way that Tokitori 2 was, but you do over the course of the story revisit a lot of the same areas. Like the game seems to just bring you back, keep looping you around like the space station through the story, but it's not, you know, it's as if like the game has kind of this whole interconnected world, but the game doesn't allow you to just go ahead and explore it from beginning to the end.
Maybe the ambition of the game was dialed back at some point.
Yeah, that's kind of what that's what I imagine the situation to have been.
But sometimes, but, I mean, with certain kinds of games, they just reuse, you know, I think a platinum games do that a lot. And, you know, they're never intended to be interconnected games this stage by stage, but at some point they kind of recycle, like, you know, Bayonetta 1-for-101, a lot of the stuff I could think where it's like, okay, you know, here's a get there, that area's been pulled into a vortex or something, so it's kind of different, but it's still the same.
It saves money and time.
Yes, precisely.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, like the environments get reused a lot, and so I didn't really know how to feel about that at first. But eventually, you know what, like I've come around, like initially I was a little bit disappointed by that fact, and by the fact that the enemies were ferocious, like they were just relentless, and just I kept exploding the first time I played through this game, and I wasn't sure how I felt about it. But then, you know, I started the second playthrough on the harder difficulty, and I kind of had this beautiful Joe moment where, you know, whereas like the first time through, I was kind of fumbling my way through, the second time I was, you know, something clicked and I was like, oh wait, like actually, I think I got this. Like the second time around, I know a little bit more what to expect. I know how the enemies behave. I've learned how to control this little tank that I'm controlling a little bit better, and it became more fun. And so, you know, like the enemies, like you've got your little tank, you shoot mostly, your main weapon is just like this kind of machine gun, and the enemies don't really shoot at you. Some enemies shoot, you know, guided missiles at you, but most of the time they just ram into you. And so you just kind of, and as the tank, you have a double jump, and that's pretty much it. Like you might gain some other temporary abilities later to solve some puzzles, but most of the time you can just hop twice and that's it. And so as you get better with the game, you kind of just like kind of start hopping around like over the enemies that are ramming into you, like, and then like shooting them from behind. And a friend who's been playing the PlayStation 4 version of this game, described it as like you start kind of dancing with the enemies, and I thought that was cute. Like, and it's kind of, you know, an appropriate description of what happens. It's very, very satisfying, the combat. And as far as the reuse of environments go, I think that they, even though you're always in the same space station and things look, you know, pretty much the same throughout, like there's not a whole lot of variety in the backgrounds or the environments, it doesn't feel like you're constantly like in the same places. Like it doesn't get, you know, the place doesn't get boring, because they manage to mix up things a lot just by, you know, like, oh, this area that you've explored previously, now it's filled with water. Like enemies that you've faced before come back, and all of a sudden, like, they're not smarter and they don't take more hits to kill, but the fight is harder because, you know, the place is flooded. You can only shoot when you're jumping out of the water. And then, like, they might iterate on that later on again. And, like, not only you're in water and there's enemies all over the place, but there's also a kind of circular saw that's going back and forth in the water that you have to jump over. And there's lasers also above the water, and that you have to avoid as well. Like, they just... So they keep iterating on the challenges in the game, and it just it feels overwhelming, I gotta say, like the first time through. But then, like, you know, eventually you get it, you learn the levels, you learn how to deal with each challenges, and it just gets a whole lot of fun. And even though there isn't a whole lot of people on the leaderboards right now, because it seems like It's very, very sad. I'm, as a fan of Two Tribes, I'm pretty sad to see that, but it seems like they only got the review code in the hands of like maybe a couple dozen people. It's well, you know, when you've got me on your Rolodex as an influencer, like you're
wow.
You're kind of got one that I didn't.
Well, yeah, you're kind
of
fucked. We
got multiple review copies for this game, to be honest.
I know, yeah, but like personally, like I was on there, like, you know, that's sad. Like, I think you're in a bad position.
I have never influenced anyone.
No. So
the sad reality is we probably have at some point, and probably not to do something, probably to do something stupid like watch fucking Cobra.
Yeah.
Watch Cobra while listening to the
dumb
podcast.
Fucking movie they always talk about.
Watch Cobra while listening to the podcast while procreating. Yeah.
Oh my god, no! But
moving on. Isn't that the origin story for how Freddy was born? I forget. I get mixed up.
Close enough.
So even though like the leaderboards are very sparsely populated right now, I had a lot of fun trying to be at the top of certain of the challenges and just competing with some people I interact with on Twitter.
I'm coming for you, Guillaume.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, so leaderboards.
Did you message any of them directly saying, "I'm going to take you"?
Yeah, I took pot shots at who is it? Twin World or I don't know, Maniac.
Twin Galaxies. They're big in the high schools.
Yeah, there you go.
at Twin World on Twitter, so he was streaming the game, and so I was like, well, I can't stream the game on Twitter. I said, like, I retweeted him and I said, I don't have streaming equipment, but at the very least, I can retweet the streams of people ranked below me in this game.
The claws.
Well, I was not completely.
You're giving
this
show a bad name, Guillaume, and I approve.
I think it's, you know, it's all in good fun. And also, it was not quite true. Like, in some leaderboards, this game has a ton of leaderboards, and on some of them, I was doing well. On most of them, I'm not doing so well. I don't know, like, I kind of got addicted, and just before recording, I was checking to see, like, are my scores still standing right now, and... Yeah, like they're pretty much unchallenged. The game hasn't been released yet.
But, yeah, you still got like an hour and 40 minutes before you could start the countdown to when some savants will get it and just demolish everything. I don't know.
Yeah. So, but like I was checking very quickly like my scores before coming to record, and then I saw that there's challenges outside of the campaign that you can start, you know, like they're kind of like discrete chunks of the main game, like one challenge, but like you get wave after wave of enemy, and you have like to survive this thing, or you have to, anyway, and score the most points in doing so. And it seems like one challenge opens per day. So I was like, oh, okay, well, while I'm at it, I might as well try the daily challenge. And the reason why I was 10 minutes late recording is because I was trying to get the gold medal on that freaking challenge.
Because you were just trolling other Twitch streamers?
Also, yes.
Talking smack, but, as is his wont.
Yeah, so all this to say that it's pretty addictive, and my opinion of the game went up considerably once, you know, I guess once my expectations for the game were out of the way, and also once I kind of got more into it, and once the gameplay once the gameplay clicked a little bit better for me. So, you know, like I recommend people, you know, check this game, and not out of pity for the developer who really needs to try to reach out to other, you know, people with actual influence, but also because it's a really good game. The action is really fast. The game is 60 frames per second. I didn't experience any hiccups in handheld or in on TV mode, and it was
that's cool.
Yeah, like it's a great little game. And one last thing that I like about the score attack aspect of it is that some challenges do kind of feel like endless. Like, you know, we've discussed this about like pinball games where you end up having to play forever to be able to beat the previous high score. So there's that kind of thing going on. But there's also like the daily challenges that I mentioned earlier. Usually demand that you last for like a certain, you know, amount of time, or that you kill a certain number of enemies. And it's all about kind of keeping the combo going and trying to score the best you can within that time.
Yeah, so those are the ones that are more kind of inviting to come back to, because it's not like, well, if I'm going to do well, it's going to take ages, you know, and then there's all the sort of false starts that you might have along the way.
Yeah, so I can see myself getting addicted a little bit to those challenges, so... I don't know. Like I hopefully my I won't be humiliated too much once actually people start playing and start beating my scores. But anyway, it's a
so
great
remember,
game.
Remember, what goes around comes around, and I expect people who beat his scores to come around and tell him about it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it.
So I have been traveling this week, and as you may. I don't know how much is going to get edited out. My Wi-Fi is absolute crap, so that also all the joy of being in a hotel.
Hmm.
And so I haven't had a lot of time to.
Have you got an N64 controller in hand?
No, so
that is not all the joy of being in a hotel.
I was going to talk about the fact that those are actually kind of gone now.
Exactly.
We've finally gotten. There, I mean, there was an episode where we talked. Somebody who was it that talked about playing on those things. At some point, somebody was talking about. But regardless,
I thought it was you. But
was it?
Maybe
it was.
Unless
maybe it was.
Having, like,
I don't know.
A dissociative episode.
I could be. I've been working a lot this week because this is a work trip, not personal. But I want to talk a little bit about one of the Switch use cases they showed in the video, which is like playing
rooftop
on an airplane.
Parties.
No.
Oh, playing no. I was all up for that.
Playing it as
James
a travel
on
device.
A rooftop in Seattle getting pissed on playing his Switch.
So it has rained miserably every day. It was actually colder in Virginia before I left. It's not been as cold as it was at all. Because we were getting in the 20s.
Yeah, it is the closest thing to British weather. I mean, it's never actually
but it
like
has rained,
really cold.
It has rained
cold,
every
but...
fucking day. And in some cases, it's rained in like these magnificent... Like to the point where there was a storm that it made national news how bad it was. And it just happened. It was like, oh, here's the 4 to 6 o'clock storm. Have fun. But... So one thing that I have, that means I've been trapped in the hotel room a lot. Even when I'm not working, I'm not going out because A, it's 3 hours time shifted. So I'm getting home at what my brain thinks is like 9 p.m., 10 p.m. And B, the weather sucks. So it's like, well, do I want to drive? And I'm not in downtown Seattle. I'm outside. So it's like, do I want to drive into town at a time my brain thinks is late and then do something and then come back and then start work at like before 8 the next day? Not really. So I brought the Switch on the plane because one of my phobias is a fear of being bored. Like I get bored really easily and it makes me crazy. And I was flying American because it's the finest flight only your company will ever book for you.
Come on. Remember we talked about all the corporate shill opportunities at the podcast.
No, until they
we'll,
pay.
We'll deal with that. Yeah.
Did
I mean,
they give
until
you a
they...
room at the Holiday Inn?
No, I have an X-stay room. It's nice. But American does this thing now where their in-flight entertainment is entirely BYOD, which means like no screens, no nothing. You have to pull out your fucking phone and hook up to their fucking Wi-Fi to watch their videos on the plane because that's cheaper for them. And that sucks. It sucks to use. It's quality's bad. The streaming sucks. The selection is much lower on that setup. Just all around not fun. So I brought the Switch on board, and I have a big one of those big rechargeable batteries that you can hook it up to. And so I got about 100 moons in Mario on the plane.
How nice.
Because in case you're wondering, the flight from Charlotte to Seattle is pretty fucking long.
And these are late game moons because you already had loads.
Yeah, I'm in the 800s at this point. So one of the things that I found, so Nintendo had their whole like kiosk of like sitting on the plane with it on the tray table and playing it that way. Yeah, that doesn't work. Not least of which is because the angle's wrong, so you're looking down really hard. However, I bought a case to protect it while it was in my bag, and that works perfectly. Sitting on top of the case, it's great. So then I thought, okay, I can hook up to this battery, and then I can use it for charge, and I can use it for, like, the whole flight. No, because the port for charging the fucking thing is on the bottom, and if you're using the kickstand, it's covered. So, Nintendo Strike 2. But what I found is putting on the tray table on the little stand, which is, you know, about 2.5 inches tall or so, or on the case. With the kickstand is about the right height, and then I can hold the Pro Controller, which I threw in my bag, under the tray table and play that way. So it just looks like I'm very intently staring at a tablet sitting on my. But it works. But what I found most kind of likable about the Switch is that I threw the charger is the charger, so it's the same charger that plugs into the base station, the dock. Well, and I thought about it. I'm like, well, I'll just grab the dock because all I'm going to have to do is carry the HDMI cable, which I could fold up inside the dock. And, you know, the dock is actually really small. Like, I'd already packed. I found a slot between, like, socks and dress shirt or undershirts that I was able to slide the dock in, not have to unpack anything. And what I concluded is that actually, this is probably the most portable console I've ever had. So I get in the hotel room, and hotels aren't
blocking the... It's literally a portable console.
Yep.
Hotels aren't blocking the HDMI ports on their TVs anymore to force you to buy their fucking pay-per-view nonsense. So the HDMI ports are completely exposed. I just put the dock next to the TV, plugged it in, plugged the HDMI port in, and dropped the Switch in from the case, and I have now hooked up the Switch. And it doesn't take up any space in my luggage at all, effectively. And it's like, oh, I actually have all of my video games with me. It's like the weird use case for the Switch actually fucking works in this like surrealist, like, oh, this is everything Nintendo always wanted. It's like they really did take the handle from the GameCube, as they said during their January event. But yeah, it's actually worked really well. You know, I have it in my room to play when it's the weather makes me not want to go outside after work. It's been like a good lifesaver as opposed to using shitty cable from the hotel. Now, I bought some games to play on the plane, and ultimately I didn't. I played Mario. But I'll get to those eventually.
Nice.
I'll get to those eventually, I'm sure. But just not today. But yeah, it works. I didn't play it with the Joy-Cons, because, like, fuck that noise. Having the Pro Controller works just fine. Just, you kind of have to have it in your lap while you're playing, and it works fine. So I'm happy about it. This is a successful use case for the Switch. Good job, Nintendo.
I'm looking forward to the remake of that George Clooney movie, which is a lot less interesting because he doesn't spend his time romancing Vera Farmiga or whatever. He just plays Switch all the time.
Is that one Up in the Air?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I watched that on a plane. I think going to Europe, which you'll watch fucking anything on a transcontinental plane. It's like, fuck it, I don't care what this is. Is this TV show only in Japanese with no subtitles? I watched everything else on the flight up here. I guess I gotta watch it now. Why are they giving a tour of a ramen museum? Well, this is fucking useless. But yeah, it was a good way to kill probably about 3 hours of my flight, all told. So, much appreciated. Thank you, Nintendo. I mean, insofar as I have to thank you, considering I paid you for the privilege. But hey, if you want to pay us for the privilege of the thanks, we're down for it. But with that, it is time to wrap up new business. When we come back, we have an assortment of listener mail. Stay tuned. Alright, so we're back with listener mail. You, listening right now, thinking, they don't mean me, I mean you. Right now, stop picking your nose and send us an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And I mean it this time. There's no low bar for email. There's no bar too low, as this set of emails is picked to prove. Greg, if you would read the first email...
Oh, I certainly can't solve this mystery. Can you?
Thank you, Greg, English teacher.
Detroit. Ben C. from Detroit, Michigan writes, "Hey, RFN crew. I've recently come to the conclusion that Waluigi is my favourite character in the Mario universe. I think that other Nintendo franchises could benefit from the Wah treatment."
Great.
Think about it. Whamus in Metroid, Walutena in Kid Icarus, Wabraham Lincoln in Codename Steam. Are you kidding me? Which Nintendo characters do you guys think are worthy of the Wah?
Thanks for the email, Dan Riker.
I've told you, there's no bar too low, and you all never listened. And now I have definitively proven there is no bar too low. This is a bad email. So what are we gonna? How are we gonna handle it? Who's got their Wah?
I can finish it. I can finish this email right
okay.
now.
I've got
Wah
I got one.
Tingle.
Isn't that Wongle?
Meh, maybe, but the concept anyway. It's over.
I mean, the problem is like that means there's art because we've already have the Nega Tingle. This is like the negative tingles. I don't know. This is fucked. This is
yep.
dark.
No, that's
Wait,
it. That's where, it. It's
where,
done.
Where is the negative tingle?
We'd have to. That's what I'm saying. Like you've got to go.
Oh, okay.
You've got to go one step, and because Waluigi's not the inverse Mario, he's like the inverse reflection of Mario.
Well, no, he's the inverse Luigi.
Yeah.
Who was a color swap Mario? But we need, anyway.
Yeah, there's plenty of color swap tingles in Wind Waker and stuff.
That's true,
so,
but they're all enslaved.
Wah Tingle, I'm telling you, it's there.
So,
I don't
so John,
think it's...
John missed in an email missed the whole purpose of the joke and went with Cho Waniki, which he just went totally.
That's not a character.
No, like I said, he missed the whole purpose of the joke.
That was it. It would have to be like I.
Wafton Wombo.
Oof. So I went with was Steve Hewitt, because that's John's favorite character.
Yeah.
Wom from Fire Emblem Awakening.
He doesn't fall down into the lava. He actually pushes you into it.
He then, is the lava.
And then gleefully walks along.
Bayonetta.
Yeah, I mean, Bayonetta's already kind of, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking.
What's the Danny DeVito character in Bayonetta?
Oh yeah. It's kind of a DeVito Pesci hybrid. Yes.
Wah, whatever his name is.
I was thinking Wah Wah Luigi. Just double it down on it.
I was gonna go there.
There you go.
You know, the whole Joe Pesci thing. I don't know. Like, why not get Michael Keaton there and get, like, Multiplicity up in here and just,
I thought
you
were going to say Batman Returns.
take the mirror image of the mirror image and call it Wawario.
Wabi Wabo.
Oh, all right. Now you're just, all right.
I don't even know what these characters are.
Yeah, it's okay. It's too far at this point.
My knowledge of Nintendo character lore is not deep enough that I can't even recognize like what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. I see.
So
yeah, Chibi-Robo is the thing you think of when you're in the situation at the end of Ghostbusters, isn't it? I mean, he's just the most innocent thing in the world. He couldn't hurt anyone. But then he's got a mustache and it's kind of pointy.
Does the breakdancing pig from Paper Mario Color Splash have a name?
Probably. Everything has a name. I got
That is.
This is really, really simple. Wah, Dr. Mario. He throws virus. He throws virus.
Not Dr. Wario, which is a thing, but Wah, Dr. Mario.
Exactly.
Wachter.
So he just throws viruses into the jar instead. Into your medicine
container.
To get
rid of pills.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's not Wah Mario. It's Wario. So it's Wachter.
Yeah. Yeah, I see the logic, but the point is he's creating those super bugs, you know, that resistance to antibiotics.
He's going to make sure you're all sick.
I was trying to come up with, like, Wah Snip and Wah Clip, but
I don't know that we need to worry about getting the naming convention. I think we can get the spirit of Wah Yoshi correct. Yeah.
Oh, there's already Boshi.
Yoshi's already Wah Yoshi.
This Boshi was done in Super Mario RPG.
It's been done.
We already got that.
No, but that's the point. Like, this isn't about creating an evil Yoshi. This is about creating a hapless Yoshi who only appears in tennis games.
Wawa Slider.
Oh. I don't like this at all.
Look, you're gonna put me on this episode.
Like I said,
and give me this email and not expect Wavin the Third, Wavin the Terrible.
Alright, that's it. Time to roll. next fucking email.
Please.
Saran.
Sure. Waklex Yoshi writes.
That's the real Klex Yoshi, thank you.
Klex Boshi.
Yeah, Klex Boshi writes, "Dear sellout capitalist pigs, tilde exclamation point.
That's me.
I know you're slobbering to get your palms greased for a little bit of that SEO juice, capital J, as the folks in the business call it, and I'm honestly surprised you guys haven't reached out to the likes of, say, Squarespace, or Ting.com, or SeatGeek. Seriously, you guys are, like, the only podcast I listen to other than retro game music that doesn't bookend every episode with a cavalcade of emotional considerations." Promotional? No, emotional considerations.
No, because they're usually, like, trying to like, hey, you know, sometimes my underwear doesn't feel right, but I solve that problem by going to, I can't remember what the name of that one is. MeUndies.
Don't give it away for free!
No, yes. No,
the
no,
worst sellout capitalist pig I've ever known!
But let's get a little closer to the ground here. If you guys could realistically... If you guys could have a sponsor for this show, who would it be, and what sort of segment would you guys invent in lieu of something like, say, Now Playing, to shill the product on a week-by-week basis while simultaneously tying it to the subject matter at hand? Bonus points if Guy comes up with a sponsor who primarily deals with French-speaking clients and comes up with a way to make it relevant to an English-speaking audience.
I guess I should have read that email earlier.
There you go.
Pringles. So,
I mean, Pringles is relevant to all audiences at all times because of its delicious flavor and it won't leave your hands greasy while you're playing video games. I don't need a unicorn sponsor. Like, I don't need to have, like, the perfect sponsor for the situation. I can make it work. I mean, we made Now Playing work for years. And that was...
That is a debatable contention.
It continued to happen, and Neil did not fire us, and therefore, to some extent...
That's not the definition of work.
He wasn't listening.
And I'm pretty sure that people who were featured on Now Playing didn't frequently write upset emails. Therefore, it must have been working.
that was supposed to be the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, that's the canary in the coal mine. Are people really upset with us? We got at least one email from one person upset that the segment went away. But, you know, I mean, we're here to entertain first and inform second. And I feel like Now Playing was a great opportunity to entertain first.
And misinform.
No, I just was not going to finish the thought. So, I can make any sponsor work, but if you're going to let me gift wrap my own Christmas present for that sweet, sweet greenbacks, what I really need is I need a sponsor who's both fits form and function. What I really need is a very effective attorney. Like, really, like, and I can't talk about why. I can't go into details, but I need somebody who really believes in attorney-client privilege and is willing to pay me to talk about it. I'll take payment in lieu, like a service rendered, but it would help. And I think I can be an effective spokesperson for these. I know John can, because Lord knows that man needs an attorney like nobody's business. But there you go. Yeah. So I mean, the point is, like, if you're looking to have the 75th best Nintendo podcast shill your product, what about the 85th best instead? That's what I'm saying.
Jeez. I was going to say, like, I think there's more than that, isn't there?
We have competitive rates. We have, like, in fact, I'll give you an ad for advertising about on our show right now, completely, as John would say, off the dome.
Yeah, John, I think John would be excellent.
Why advertise on a podcast that's going to cost lots of money to get listeners? Why not advertise on a podcast that you can afford for your product, be it a robotic house cleaning device or a robotic teledildonics device? We don't care. We have no standards. It's RFN, Radio Free Nintendo. We've been around for 10 years and people are still listening for some reason. They'll probably buy our product. Our audience has no standards.
Yeah, it costs almost nothing to get your product featured on Now Shillin.
Yeah, I like it.
That's the segment, Now Shillin.
And we might actually be able to get Kurt Shillin.
I'm not sure if you want him.
do we get the music? Like, we have our... You're going to have to pay extra to get the Wii Shop music. You're probably getting the DSiWare Shop music, I'll be honest.
Oh, dear. It's,
There's no... Like, gin? I would love some gin sponsorships.
I'd want some sort of bill sponsorship. Just the constant, the theme of sort of persistent futility, but you keep going back to it for some reason. I think that's a pretty good synergy there.
Do you have a line that can't block and have a quarterback who can maybe avoid the rush, but you want to bench him for a quarterback who can't?
Yeah, that's right. Have you won games mainly because you don't turn the ball over and now you think a low-round rookie could ruin that? that's the kind of lateral thinking that we apply, so we're made for each other.
Did your defense give up 60-plus points, and you think the best way to solve it is by changing quarterbacks?
300 rushing yards, that's at home, it's humiliating, but so's doing this, so again, I you're not disproving my point, James.
Shame is all a matter of money. That's all I'm going to say. You could pay...
Hey, James.
Yes.
What's the next email?
What's the next email? The next email is about money. I don't know. I don't remember what the next email is.
It's going to be so weird when next week Two Tribes actually sends us money to advertise our game on a podcast.
No, it won't. We don't take money if they're advertised video games. Guillaume, I believe you have the next email.
TJ writes, "Hello, Arifin. I'm taking a break from making love while listening to your show for the sole purpose of suggesting the perfect category for your Hall of Shame. Best fictional RFN game. You've concocted so many great fake games in your shows that these names must be preserved. Hoping to play Layton's Journey, Belichick and the Underinflated Spygate, Mystery of the Missing Defense."
It's not been great this year, to be fair, the Pats defense. I mean, it's you know, but they always find a way in the end. So, yeah.
To me, the thing that's always been RFN's best titles are the ones where the title's actually a real game. Like, incomprehensibly, the game that we're talking about is real. And, of course, the one that makes everybody groan, I mentioned, is your Tube Sliders, because that sounds like something John would have said.
I thought it was Tube Slider singular.
I think it's plural. But, like, regardless, like, that sounds like something we would have said in a follow-up to, like, some other really crass...
It's singular.
Okay. I knew it was singular. I knew it made even less sense.
Congratulations, you're now the foremost expert on Tube Slider. congrats. I'll send you
That's your fault, by the way, James. I mean, there's no way I would know that without you. And yet, so again, you're having a dissociative episode.
The student has surpassed the master. I will send you my Tube Slider crown and label. And now everyone will know that you are the King Tube Slider.
I can't believe that ND Cube used to make video games.
Oh, dear me.
This email's gone off the rails immediately. So, we have fake
names.
Well,
look, everyone, the hill I'm going to die on with fake names is Blatterhouse, because I refuse to believe that it is a fake name. I refuse to confirm that. I choose to live in a perpetual state of uncertainty where it may or may not exist.
So, we actually fleshed that game out pretty far. Conceptually, we gave that game life. And it's entirely possible that by talking about it, we created some parallel universe where it was made. But unfortunately, I don't think we live in that universe. But it does bear solid recommendation as a great fake game title. I'm trying to remember what some of the other ones we've done over the years. I mean, Guillaume has Glitter Metroid, which will...
Yeah, which still haunts me to this day. it's really...
It's
you know how Sinbad... You know how Sinbad, like, there's this kind of fake memory that people have of Sinbad being in a genie movie. Lots of people come to me telling me that Glitter Metroid is, like, one of the best Metroid games that they've played.
Oh, it's like the being John Malkovich where they keep saying, "Oh, yeah, I loved you in that Jewel Thief movie."
Oh no.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what some of the other fake games we've done were though.
I've got a new one, by the way, which is Even Worse Dudes, in which you play as either Jerry Jones or Papa John and you are trying to take on an endless supply of Roger Goodell's thugs to depose him from his ill-gotten seat at the head of the NFL table.
Oh, but does that mean that you have to, like, be... Really, you're Jerry Jones' lawyers, then, more than anything.
Oh, no, Jerry... Yeah, this is the video game romanticized version, so obviously he's rolling up his sleeves and doing it himself.
Oh, okay. That will be...
Once you get to the top, I'm imagining Goodell as kind of like Belga or whatever it is from Final Fight, just in a wheelchair with a crossbow for no particular reason, just because that's the kind of terrible person he is.
All right, I'm on with crossbows. I'm here for this. So I feel like there were a bunch of games when we get this question every so often, like, make a game, and unfortunately I never really log them.
There was someone here that actually made games.
That's true. So, does anybody else remember any of the other dumb games we've created over the years?
I was going to say Glitter Metroid.
Yeah, Glitter Metroid is sort of the memorable one, because A, there's a shortness to the title that lets it stick around, and B, like, it's immediately, there's a visual representation to go with it. Like, it's glitter, and it's Metroid, therefore it is glitter Metroid.
Well, like, I would, has anybody actually taken the Metroid amiibo and put glitter on it?
You know, that sounds like an Etsy thing to be found
somewhere. The actual material that the Metroid itself is made of would make that really difficult.
They had those, like, so things are just
too beautiful to be real.
I'm afraid that I don't really remember any titles that we came up with. I record these so specifically so I don't have to remember. I'm like Henry Jones in The Last Crusade.
Nice.
Gotta go back for my notebook.
I will say that James usually makes up, I think he's probably made up 15 to 20 Layton titles, but I don't remember any of them.
Sometimes it's not really creativity, as it is just like misspeaking or
like, eventually I just run out of words and I'm just like, I'll just keep putting words together until I have a Layton title. Adventure mm-hmm. of the, I don't know, there's a giant fucking robot under London. I don't care.
Especially with the whole European, like, wanting to give it different names, you know, like Lost Futures that have unwound future, and, you know, Pandora's Box?
Pandora's Box versus the Diabolical Box.
That's right, yeah. Yes. Obviously. To me, we should give it to Nintendo of Europe for Pentatentacles. I mean, that is...
That's a good name.
That is amazing.
Terrible name.
Isn't it Rotozoa here?
Which is actually, like, legit. That's a good name for that game.
Yeah, but Pentatentacles
is not so much.
Nintendo presents new Pentatentacles 2.
Styling star.
A little bit of new Pentatentacles,
yes.
Too.
There it is. There's the cherry on the cake right there.
Nintendo presents a little bit of Pentatentacles Devilish Brain Training.
Oh, a little bit has been one that we've used a lot for stuff. Like,
forget that one episode where my internet went down and you were on the call for ages at a time where everything was recorded and Johnny ended up doing Mary Poppins.
I think
John suggested Choaniki versus Lords of Thunder, which, I mean, that is... I still think about that almost every day, how much that needs to happen.
I'm trying to imagine what that ends up being. Like, obviously it's some kind of scrolling shooter, but, like, are you the craft from Lords of Thunder, which are just dragons, like, trying to shoot up muscular bodybuilders? Like, I don't know if I'm ready.
Well, maybe it could be like the sort of Tekken cross Street Fighter cross Tekken, where, you know, you kind of plan to do each one from the other perspective, but then you kind of end up not doing one of those.
A little bit of Mario Clock.
There we go.
Power block anyone?
The first 3 hours?
Yeah, it's only good from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Beyond that, fuck off.
The rest is paid DLC.
I'm gonna pitch that to
it's
Nintendo.
A loot box. You get one random hour. Damn it! I already had noon.
The Switch doesn't have any alarm clock functionality, so I'm gonna go pitch that to them, and then I'm gonna also do a little bit of my notebook.
Yeah, no, I like that. They use the HD Rumble for the...
Oh, yeah, for the pen, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what, like... A little bit is really like, the golden ticket to coming up with bad video game titles. Like, you could really just a little bit of anything. You could do a little bit of Mario Odyssey, at which point it's not 800,000 fucking moons lying around the place. It's just a regular game.
It's a tighter, more compact experience.
You could do
a little bit of WarioWare Mega Micro Games.
A little bit of Birds and Bees.
Oh, God. See, I mean, it's the part we reviewed?
Yeah, I was about to say, hey, look, your review would be accurate. You can just copy and paste.
I still can't fucking believe that game showed up.
the championships.
I feel like with Smash Brothers, we went through this phase for a while where we were like
a little bit of Smash controller.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no, that's good. That's dire. That's 10 cents for A button functionality.
Yes, yes. You can you can use the smash attacks only. You can't move.
They're specials. They're expendable cards. The buttons are all cards.
Loot box.
Jeez.
All right.
So we have another email because again, the bar just can't get any lower. Sebastian writes.
I'm beginning to think that the assembly of emails here is like a cry for help or something.
Sebastian writes, "Dear RFN crew, with the recent inclusion of Princess Tomato in Super Bomberman R, I figured I would ask you guys, as experts on coming up with ridiculous stuff to put in games, which character would you like to see Konami dig up and put into the Bomberman suit? Master Higgins Bomber? Duran from Lords of Thunder Bomber? Pachinko Bomber? The possibilities are almost limitless. Unless you consider... Okay.
D-Dog Bomber.
D-Dog is pretty good, but like that's actually kind of nice and would actually kind of like it.
D-Walker
so
Bomber.
So just to illustrate how bad I am at doing this, and by this I mean podcasting,
yeah.
I failed to mention when I talked about Bomberman R that the Pyramid Head is in Bomberman,
is
in that game.
Yeah,
that was
the first DLC, like with pack, the update, I should say, that they did with characters, because they had the Vic Viper and Simon Belmont, right? And then Pyramid Head.
Yeah, so it's just, I don't know. Like, I felt like that was kind of like the peak that, you know, you could reach, like, with Konami. I mean, what can top Pyramid Head? Like, they haven't come around to, oh, God.
They've come around to the nurse is what they've come around to.
Oh, my God, okay.
Yeah, that's
But I mean, like,
welcome.
Konami could put out, like...
I just copied and pasted the what's probably going to end up being the chapter art.
So
thank you, Konami monsters.
So
they could put out at this point like the Moai Head Bomber, but like I don't know. Does it touch this? I don't think so.
No, I wouldn't.
It can live alongside. Like we're not trying to necessarily top. It'd be perfectly acceptable if we found a place that they can live together. So like if you wanted to have the Yami Yugi Bomber. With his ridiculous hair and screaming about the heart of the cards every time he puts a bomb down. There you go. You can do it.
So, I think the full list of characters that just got added are Dracula, Jehudi, Goemon, Reiko from Rumble Roses, Shiori Fujisaki from Tokimeki Memorial, Gradius Options.
Options.
Just the options.
Yeah, Princess Tomato and Bubbleheads.
This is really not new from Konami. I mean, like, there's YY Racing, of course, but they also put, like, that bunny from Silent Hill 3 in Elebits. And it's just... I don't know. Like, someone at Konami is pretty messed up.
Well, I mean,
Terrible. Oh.
It's terrible. Did they get Messi to do the cover one time? Can they do a bomber for him?
What, Lionel Messi?
Yeah.
Greg, there's two options, actually.
Oh, wow.
There's two. Yeah, they pretty much look the same.
Mm-hmm. Should be at least four. They should rotate.
You would think, but I guess it's the NES version.
Good point. well played. I mean, for me, an earnest answer to this would have been Goemon, and they've done that. So
yeah, they have.
You know, I guess I can't really ask any more from them. It's nice to know that Goemon is still alive in their thoughts in much the same way that Princess Tomato is. Even though, I mean, really, if you're having a character from
Lisa.
That game, it shouldn't be the title character, should it?
No, because she's only in it.
It's
like,
it'd either be the persimmon that you see all the time, or it's Lisa. Those are the only two valid answers.
So it's a persimmon wearing a towel, because we never see Lisa's body. We only really see her head and shoulders. She could just be a set of head and shoulders. We don't know.
I don't actually know the names of the bosses in Castlevania, but if they're going to have that many kind of main characters from that franchise. They should, at the very least, maybe it wouldn't work as a player or character, but add as a boss, you know, like the ball of basically like naked human remains or whatever it is. So just have a
legion.
Just have a whole bunch.
Is it legion?
Okay, legion. Yeah, it must be something like that. So just have a legion, but with a ton of Bombermen, you know, in a ball floating up. And make that one of the bosses.
I love that. The Bomberman Legion. That's beautiful. I thought he was going to go like Slogra or something really obscure. But that has been in enough Castlevania games to be a kind of meme at this point.
I mean,
it would probably be the same sprite too. They would just
yes,
they would just reuse it again.
I mean, the entire cast of Love Plus could be bombers. I think we're there at this point. They have Tokimeki. So, like, really, it's just one step from there.
Oh, my God. No. You know, they put out a patch for Love Plus on 3DS, like, 2 months ago out of nowhere.
Good.
They're still thinking about that.
I'm surprised there's not a mobile game.
There is.
Okay, well, there you go. They could just have a health clinic bomber. It's just a gym, and it doesn't do anything good. It's just
Frogger.
Useless. Yeah, if you want to be boring, sure, you can have Frogger Bomber.
Dr. Latrek Bomber.
There you go. The true bangers of Konami's library. Dr. Latrek, he's not a professor of archaeology, he's a doctor, thank you.
The main character from Dual Pen Sports.
I mean, you could have the Jakku Powerful Pro, whatever it is. Like, I mean, he already looks like a Bomberman character. It's your basically
the insects
already.
That you shoot from Onslaught on WiiWare.
Oh, Onslaught, yes. I remember.
They didn't make it. I'm trying to think of
why isn't
made...
Bonk Bomber a thing? Like, real talk.
Yeah, that is legitimately surprising considering
because
they've
Hudson
gone obviously
dead.
Yeah, no, but look at this other stuff they're bringing in.
This is
totally Bomberman.
Dead. I know, because you're trying to ascribe reality to Konami, and you can't do it. It's not possible. They don't exist. Police Knots Bomberman. There you go. Just all the Police Knots characters as Bomberman. Done. Make it happen.
The I'll end, do. Bomber.
Yes. Did we, Did we already do WA Bomberman?
Cross promotion.
We
got
to circle back to that.
Cross promotion, WA Bomberman. We will advertise your WA Bomberman patch for.
No. You got to think about it. WA Lisa. That's true. Why they're so excited that it is Lisa and not her doppelganger.
Oh, okay. I get it now.
Oh, it's Lisa, thank God. It's not Wa-Lisa.
Yeah,
like
it would have been a much more gruesome game if it had been Wa-Lisa, of course.
Hey, yeah. James?
Yeah?
Would Wa-Dracula be Wakula or Wakula?
Yeah.
Just get out of here.
I refuse to answer that question on account it makes me not feel good. Wait, Lethal Enforcers. We need the Lethal Enforcers characters as Bomberman. That's really where we're going, because that's a fine video game made by professionals with, I think, FMV. Yeah, so that's FMV Bomberman. Oh, now I'm excited.
You know you want the entire cast of the Goonies as Bombermen, but unfortunately I don't think they're going to go through the licensing to make that
happen.
Yeah,
it's too much work, but that's going to do it for the No Bar is Too Low email segment. You can send a sheer email of dubious quality or not to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. So, it's plugs time. First off, Telethon. Hey, remember the Telethon? We talked about it a couple weeks ago. We're talking about it again. We have our retroactive to lead off the Telethon, which is on Saturday, December 2nd. That is less than 2 weeks from when you are hearing this. RFN will be kicking it off at noon with our retroactive of La Mulana on WiiWare. You can find more info at NintendoWorldReport.com. Seren also has a segment.
I also have a segment. I'm not going to be playing La Mulana, so that's your chance to hear me.
John and I have a segment, and John has been put in charge of planning it. He has not responded to my emails asking him if he is planning it. I am concerned.
Good.
Always
a good sign with him.
look forward to that. Our goal for this Child's Play Telethon is $4,000. It is eminently achievable, and I don't know if this will be announced yet or not before I do this, but we'll be doing a bunch of, like, video game streaming in the lead up to that to try to raise some money. But I don't know what the schedule is for that, but the first one is on Black Friday, so look forward to that.
I'll be doing some streaming to lead up to this. I might come up with a theme, like games that needed better designers.
There will be a schedule. It is not posted. I have not made it yet. It's got 3 entries on it, and there's 10 slots. I'm starting to get worried. But that's
okay. No one has contacted me for dates.
Welcome to telethon planning, where everything comes together at the last minute, or it doesn't, and we all just fake it. Saran, do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I can plug. Follow me at... Yeah, follow me at SarenMCN on Twitter. I'm also twitch.tv/SarenMCN. Read my Style Savvy piece on NintendoWorldReport.com. See how I managed to dunk on Super Mario Sunshine and Dr. Metz in a Style Savvy piece.
Great.
And
10 out of 10.
Dr. Pepper cans are everywhere. And so
it's the most evocative opening line of it. It's like it was the best of times. It was the worst of times of video game media.
And then check out. I'll be archiving my Extra Life stream. But other than that, I don't think I'm allowed to pitch any game projects I'm working on right now. Monochrono's on hold.
Fair enough. Greg, you have 2 things to pitch for us now, don't you?
Yeah, so we're back to a Wii Shop Channel shout-outs this week. We've got one from James here.
Not me.
Not you, James, funnily enough. suggests Bonsai Barber.
Yes.
And this is what he has to say. The Wii Remote was put to lots of gameplay mechanics in its lifetime, but Bonsai Barber had you wielding scissors, hair trimmers, a spray bottle, and more in your quest or obligation to service a bizarre community of bushy fruits and vegetables.
Go ahead.
Go on, sorry. Yeah, you go.
I was going to say, this game traces some of its lineage back to Rare. Back to Golden Rare. Yeah,
the Wii Remote feels great in doing trimming and styling tasks to please the customers, and the oddball nature of the patrons will make you chuckle. I'm sure this game will never be released again on any other platform, so get it while you can. It's a keeper. There you are.
I'm a chucklester?
There we go. Alright.
Also have the closing music.
Yeah.
To discuss. MASB, prolific writer of nonsense emails that I'm sure is just dying right now. Like, what did I do wrong?
So, to answer your question, MASB, you sent your nonsense email the week after I'd already made this list. So don't worry.
Yeah.
It's plenty nonsense.
He's probably thinking what he did wrong. I think it's probably more a matter of what he did right, to be honest, to avoid being in this rundown. But he had in one of his emails to us, he had a request for a song from Contra 3, a personal favourite game and soundtrack of mine from the Super Nintendo. He chose Tearing Up the Turnpike, which is from the second level in the game, the first top-down level, which you can't really go wrong with this. This great tracks from start to finish, and as he's noted in some of his emails, Guillaume's fondness for anniversaries, I will note that it is round about the 10th anniversary of Contra 4, the last numbered Contra game to come out. Right about now, that was a way forward developed game for DS that used the kind of 2 screens, vertical real estate, sort of changed the game a little bit. And that was marketed as a 20th anniversary Contra game.
It was.
And it's also coming up to the 25th anniversary of when MASB first played Contra 3 when he got it for Christmas. So, anniversaries everywhere.
There we go.
Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
Well done. Well,
I would argue that Contra 4 is a more important release than Sunshine. So,
all right. Well, yes. On that nonsense, because we're all going to spew some hot nonsense today. That's going
Sunshine
to end the
Sunshine is the worst Mario platformer.
I'm trying to end the show here, people. Come on. All right.
Well, yeah, I'm not really going to disagree with it. I mean,
that's going to... I'm trying to not have any controversial opinions about this 10 out of 10 perfect game.
Is it controversial, though? I mean, they're all good games.
Well...
No. Stop. Stop.
That's the controversial
yeah. Stop.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's the
controversial. That's going to do it for the show today. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, Inara.
Bye-bye.